A very intense debate in Alberta over support for non-public education models.
It says that the state will now determine when alternatives to the public education system are required. And that is extremely nebulous. Who gets to determine when home education is required? Does the state get to say, well, there's a perfectly good public school down the road, you don't need home education, now it's no longer allowed? What about private schools? If I was to suggest that some of my faith-based schools are required, they could say, well, there's also a faith-based alternative in the public system, so we don't think that your school is required.
On the feature today, a look at a controversy that got the leader of Alberta's opposition party kicked out of the legislature last week. In the news, a BC court ruling, bad news for pro-lifers, but potentially good news for Trinity Western University. We'll take a quick look at the election results in Manitoba with a distinctly ARPA-related angle, more pushback on Ottawa's assisted suicide legislation, an update on Cassie and Molly's law, and CARDIS challenges the business community to think outside the box when it comes to education.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
A pro-life club at the University of Victoria has lost a court challenge of a decision that essentially shut down a pro-life display on the campus at UVic. The BC Court of Appeal denied an appeal by the club of a lower court ruling which disallowed the gathering. The reason? The court said the Charter of Rights and Freedoms doesn't apply on university campuses. ARPA lawyer Andre Schutten says on the face of it, the ruling seems strange.
It does seem to me that for the most part, most of our public universities are state actors. And when it comes to particular freedoms within the charter, particular freedom of expression, I mean, that's where universities are supposed to be bastions of free expression, where those state actors end up clamping down on free speech about peaceful expressions of pro-life convictions that aren't harming anyone. They're the exchange of very important moral and political issues and ideas. I think that that does leave a sour taste in my mouth.
However, Schutten says there's another side to this discussion as well.
On a principled perspective, I would say if the charter does not apply to these universities, what we really should be doing is pushing for more independence for these universities, that they're not so heavily subsidized by the state and that they're not so regulated by the state, but rather that universities be what they once were, going back 500 years or so, where they were these independent institutions set up by independent players, where they really wanted the free exchange of ideas. And I think in that sense, what's discussed in this judgment, I think in that sense, it's not such a terrible decision, though it is certainly a bad decision for pro-lifers in this particular context.
And he says there's an interesting side effect to this ruling, a side effect that could actually be a good thing in the Trinity Western Law School case, which he's getting ready to argue in BC again in the next few months.
The judgment says that the charter does not apply to a public university like University of Victoria. Well, if that's true, then the charter definitely does not apply to Trinity Western University. And when I read through this decision, it was an excellent decision for Trinity Western University. In fact, the decision came out on Tuesday of last week, and ARPA Canada filed our written argument. We had to file by Wednesday of last week, so the day after, and I was able to quickly cut out a couple of very important snippets from that judgment and insert it in our legal argument, because certainly if the charter does not apply to public universities like UVic, then the charter definitely does not apply to Trinity Western University. So I think that's going to be a really good argument for us as we move forward here in BC.
They held a provincial election in Manitoba last week. When all the votes had been counted, Brian Pallister's Progressive Conservatives won 40 seats, just 14 for the NDP and 3 for the Liberals. It's the first time since 1999 that the NDP haven't been in power in Manitoba. Of particular interest to ARPA supporters, the election of James Tietzma in the Radisson riding in East Winnipeg. Tietzma was a founding board member of ARPA Canada. In the run-up to the election, he made it clear he wasn't running for election so he could represent ARPA. He promised to work within the Tory caucus, if elected. More pushback last week on Ottawa's assisted suicide legislation. A coalition of faith groups, including Jews, Muslims, Catholics, and even the Salvation Army, held a press conference on the issue in Ottawa. Julia Beasley is a policy researcher with the Evangelical Fellowship of Canada. She says all of the groups had common cause.
To state our general opposition to the practices of euthanasia and assisted suicide, also to express a shared concern for the protection of the vulnerable, and also the importance of an emphasis on palliative care as the appropriate means of addressing the suffering of individuals.
Beasley says while the government has clearly indicated it's going ahead with this legislation, one very big concern is a lack of any conscience protection clause for healthcare workers.
We and many other organizations and groups will be really pushing for the legislation to be amended to include explicit conscience protection. You know, in the legislation, there's a preamble, there's a series of whereases that make all kinds of statements. In the least, there should be an explicit statement in there that says, you know, whereas nothing in this act compels physicians or anyone else to participate either directly or indirectly in physician-assisted death. It's mentioned sort of in passing in the final whereas of the preamble as something that they will look to address in a non-legislative way, which is alarming because that means that there's a good chance it will just fall to the provinces to decide how that will work, who they will protect, how they will protect them. And that's problematic because there's already indications from certain provinces that, you know, some are more willing than others to give full protection to conscience of physicians.
There have been some predictions that if a so-called conscience clause isn't included in the legislation, there's a chance of a court challenge on the principle of that issue. An update today on Cassie and Molly's law. You'll recall that Saskatchewan MP Kathy Wagenthal introduced a private member's bill on this a few months ago. It comes up for the first round of debate next Monday. Late last week, Wagenthal put up a video notice of that on her Facebook page.
There are too many cases of pregnant women being victims of violence in Canada. Cassie and Molly's law will add new charges against an offender that knowingly commits a crime against a pregnant woman when that crime results in harm to the preborn child. This bill is a robust and specific amendment to fill a gap in the criminal code that is leaving women vulnerable. Please write to your MP and show your support for Cassie and Molly's law.
And finally, CARDIS released a new report earlier this month on the delivery of K-12 education in Canada. Researcher Beth Green says the report, entitled Business Gone Quiet, is essentially a challenge to the business community to get involved in the discussion about education.
We know that there are employers in Canada who complain a lot about the key skills and the work ethic of Canadian graduates, but they're not asking the question about K-12 education and how it's delivered. Of course, one of the lessons that you learn in kindergarten is if you complain about something, you've got to be prepared to help fix it. So we're kind of calling them out on that silence.
Green says there may be reasons the business sector isn't engaging. Some of those reasons may have to do with contracts with the existing public school system. Other businesses simply might not ever have thought through the possibility of doing things differently. But she says it's important for that sector to contribute to a discussion about alternative methods of service delivery.
Our education program here at CARDIS has been calling for a national conversation looking at how different provinces approach this. So in the province of Alberta, for example, charter schools are one way to open up the field for people to get involved in the provision of education. The research does show positive effects for students attending charter schools, but that's not the only way. You have a situation in Saskatchewan where different levels of schools are funded depending on how far they meet central government regulations. So that means as a parent, you could get some assistance to choose a different kind of school for your child based on whether you wanted them to go to a religious school, whether you're interested in a different kind of approach like Montessori, alternative service delivery. It's encouraging people just to talk about the lots of different suggestions that there are. It's not about saying business should step in and run schools or privatize schools. We're not arguing for that.
And speaking of different ways to deliver education, that's the topic of our feature interview this week. Stay with us.
On Thursday, May 12th, Canadians in seven cities will be marching for life in either the national or one of six provincial marches. Reform prayer services have been organized in Victoria and Ottawa prior to the marches in those cities. You can find more information about the marches, prayer services, and even free lunches at arpacanada.ca/events. Please join us as we call for justice for the most vulnerable.
And we're back on the program. There's been quite a firestorm in the Alberta legislature recently over education. The leader of the PC party, Rick McIver, actually got himself kicked out of the legislature last week over a procedural wrangle with the speaker. It had to do with a private member's motion he'd introduced and an attempt by an NDP member to amend that motion, and then the speaker's ruling on the amendment. It's all quite procedural, actually. To help us sort it all out, I've got John Jagersma on the line today. John's the executive director of the Alberta Independent Schools Association. First of all, John, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot for having me.
So take us through what happened initially that caused this big uproar.
All right, I'll try to stay away from the technical jargon. 1 hour each week, you can have private member bills put forward. Non-government motions, they're called. Mr. McIver had put forward Motion 504, which said, be it resolved that the Legislative Assembly urged the government to affirm its commitment to allowing parents the choice of educational delivery for their children, including home, charter, private, francophone, separate, or public education programs. So on Monday it was introduced, and then almost immediately, one of the NDP MLAs proposed an amendment, which is very unusual. In this case, the amended motion was significantly different. It said, be it resolved that the Legislative Assembly urged the government to support public education, including francophone and separate schools, while affirming its commitment to allow parents the choice of educational delivery for their children, including home, charter, and private education programs, in such instances where they offer alternatives not available in the public system. So then there was a debate about whether they were even allowed to amend the motion, since the PC party felt strongly that this completely altered the intent of the motion. And then, while a copy was being handed out of what the potential amendments might be, by accident, Mr. McIver ended up with a copy of what the speaker was going to read on his decision regarding the amendment to the motion. Now, the speaker shouldn't really have a decision for the amendment to the motion because they haven't had the opportunity to have the discussion in the House, and democracy would suggest that you can first have the discussion and then the debate and the different perspectives, and then the speaker would make a decision on whether the amendment is allowed. So Mr. McIver was very upset, and he expressed that vocally in the legislature. And the speaker explained that he had not predetermined the decision, but people that work for the speaker in the legislature had known that a potential amendment might be coming, and so they had done some work on what the legal impact of that would be and the precedent and that sort of thing. Mr. McIver wanted the speaker to remove his decision on the amendment. The speaker wanted Mr. McIver to sit down and obey the rules of the legislature, and it ended up with, for the first time in a decade, an MLA being asked to leave the Legislative Assembly.
So, to be clear, McIver's motion would have supported the right of parents to a variety of education choices, and the NDP amendment would have restricted those choices to situations where, in the opinion of the government, the choices the parents wanted to make weren't available in the public system. Does that pretty much sum it up?
That's correct.
So McIver's out of the legislature, and then the phone calls start coming in from angry parents to the point where it looks like the government's backing down now?
I was contacted already the next day to say that the amendment would be removed. And so what happens is there's a 14-day, I think they call it a cooling off period, whenever there's an alteration to a motion. And so it won't be addressed in the Legislative Assembly again until May 2nd. And at that time, the government has indicated that they will remove the amendment and allow the motion to go forward and be debated. And according to LifeSite News, they are saying that Brian Mason, who is the government House leader, has said that the government will support the motion.
So let's get to the nub of this. Why is this so important? Why would it prompt hundreds, if not thousands, of phone calls from parents to the government?
I think the biggest factor, in my view, would be that it takes control away from the parents, and it says that the state will now determine when alternatives to the public education system are required. And that is extremely nebulous. So who gets to determine when home education, for example, is required? Does a state get to say, well, there's a perfectly good public school down the road, you don't need home education, now it's no longer allowed? What about private schools? If I was to suggest that some of my faith-based schools are required, they could say, well, there's also a faith-based alternative in the public system, so we don't think that your school is required. There's no clarity as to how the state would decide it, and it's a significant change in philosophy, and a concerning one, I would suggest, to state that the government will dictate what type of education is acceptable in what location in the province.
The flip side to this, though, is that at the end of the day, what does McIver's motion really mean? I mean, isn't it basically a motherhood statement? You know, we support educational choice. I mean, that's kind of always been the case in Alberta, hasn't it?
Since 1967, choice has been funded to varying degrees in the province. So yes, you're right. For decades, the government has said all schools benefit the public good. Therefore, all schools receive some degree of funding, and then the formulas have changed somewhat from year to year, depending on the budget. To the government's credit, they have supported choice in education. If we look at the two budgets that they've introduced, they have both continued to support choice. And so I think they could reasonably stand up and say, this is our position. They face pressure, I suspect, and this is me speculating, I have no evidence that, but I suspect they face pressure from those who prefer only the public school system, whether it be the union or public school boards. That group would suggest that the only acceptable solution is a public school system.
John, we're out of time. Fascinating stuff. We'll keep following this. Thank you.
No problem. Have a good day.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next month for another edition of Lighthouse News.